Why It Ended is brought to you by you. That's right. Why It Ended has fought against the odds in the crowded world of wrestling podcasts and become one of the top three or four wrestling interview podcasts in the entire world. And we are doing more downloads than ever. Last week was our biggest week ever, and this week's going to be bigger than that. And you can advertise to all the wrestling fans that listen to Why It Ended, whether you have a wrestling-related product or you have a product that you would advertise to the coveted 25 through 44 male demographic. We got them, and they will hear all about your product on Why It Ended. Just email us at whyitendedmail@gmail.com. That's whyitendedmail@gmail.com. Why keep your product a secret? Tell it to all the wrestling fans you can on Why It Ended.
Very special edition of Why It Ended. It's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday, and it is special for a bunch of different reasons. First and foremost, it's our first episode of 2019, which means we have made it to another year. We're still here. We're doing great. Thank you, guys. And on top of that, fresh off of Ahmed Johnson last week, we have a great guest today, and that guest is me. Matt, so
let's not gloss over that, dude, because it's the new year, a brand new year, man. I have set so many different New Year's resolutions, and of course, today is the second of the year, and I've already blown them all, so next year is going to be awesome. But the reaction to the Ahmed Johnson interview was fantastic. Downloads were huge. One of our most talked about shows ever. Did you get any good feedback from it, Robbie?
Yeah, everyone seemed to enjoy it. It's different. You know, he's done interviews before. Who hasn't? Everyone has. But, you know, like he said at the end of the interview, you know, we asked some questions that he had never been asked before. So that means the fans got some answers that they've never heard before. So that's what Why It Ended does. It always brings a different approach. And I think that's why everyone loved it so much.
You know, and he said we were great interviewers.
Yeah, well, I think he was more talking about me. Probably you,
well,
but whatever.
Probably you, because, you know, I mean, how did that come about? Said by you 10 times is really the best interview I've ever heard.
Hey, so, well, guys.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, guys, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Why It Ended. Check out our Patreon page, the new year, you know, help us out. We're giving you the podcast for free. You're going to get some freebies for joining. And then Pro Wrestling Tees, get the shirts. Tell your friends, leave the 5-star ratings, write some positive reviews about us. We're very appreciative. And, you know, tweet us, stay active. We'll stay back active with you.
And stay tuned for the end of the show, because this might be the last episode of Why It Ended with Robbie E. We'll explain at the end. But today, Robbie, we are going to let our good friend Larry at A Wrestling Historian on Instagram follow that page, or else he will ask you to do it again. And he's a great Patreon member, big supporter of the show. Larry's going to introduce our show. So we've got to know each other pretty well. And Matthew even remarked to me, you know, because he knows I don't get along with everybody, you know, and he said, you and Robbie really like each other. And it's true. I love working with you, but I don't know ton about your wrestling career, and I also don't know why Robbie E. ended, and Robbie E. is ended, and one thing we're going to see is Robert Strauss on the Titan Games, you know, so make sure to check that out. We're going to let Larry take it away from us, and then coming back, our most anticipated show ever. What do you think?
Why It Ended with me.
We're going to let Larry do that. Larry.
Hello, this is Brent, owner of PleasurePronictsUSA.com. And with the holidays coming, we have a new special offer for the Why It Ended listener. Visit StopUsingYourHand.com/booty and pick up one of our top-selling products. Regularly priced $160 for only $95. And that $95 includes free shipping. This realistic booty replica is made from soft, realistic cyber flesh and features two uniquely textured entry points for maximum pleasure. If a little booty's not going to do it for you, we still have the free stroker promotion as well. Visit StopUsingYourHand.com/promo and enter the code FISTBUMP. That's right, Robbie does the fist bump, and so can you with this free stroker. All you have to pay is $6.95 for shipping and handling. Take advantage of one of these promotions today or visit StopUsingYourHand.com and check out our other exciting products, including our flagship, the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right. Have you ever wanted to be with a porn star? Now you can with a 3V Starlet Stroker. Have vibration. Have that voice of sexy Lauren Phillips or Sarah J or six other adult superstars send you over the top with the 3V Starlet Stroker. Come on, guys. Check your ego at the door. You know everybody does it. Why deprive yourself of satisfaction when Pleasure Products USA cares about your privacy? Your order will arrive in plain packaging, and your credit card statement will not reflect an adult product was purchased. So what are you waiting for? Visit StopUsingYourHand.com today. And remember, Pleasure Products USA, our business is your pleasure.
So we are joined by, it's a little bit different today, guys, bringing the new year with a different kind of feel, Robbie E. Robert Strauss. You've been a wrestler for how long?
Believe it or not, as young as I look, I have been a professional wrestler for, God, this is weird being a guest on my own show, but I have been a wrestler for over 18 years now, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. And again, and being serious here, it might be because, I might look a little younger, you just forget how young I started, but yeah, I've been wrestling for over 18 years, man, more than half of my life.
You're 35 years old. You started when you were a teenager. But when we've interviewed people, you don't know, and it's one of the things about our show, like, you're not like a wrestling historian. You don't know like the ins and outs of the promoters and all that stuff. Are you like an Attitude Era type fan that became a wrestler? How did you discover wrestling?
Well, I discovered wrestling because my older brother liked it. So he is, let's see, I'm 35. He's like 40. So he's like 5 or 6 years older than me.
You know how much older your brother is than you?
Well, I had to think of how old he was.
He's always been the same amount older than you. Always.
So, when I was younger, I had an older brother. So what did I want to do? Everything my older brother did. So he liked wrestling. Therefore, I liked wrestling. And I remember the first ever match I saw, and this is a true story. It was a Sunday night's main event, Dan Spivey versus Sting. So this was probably, '88? I was like 5. So I'm guessing that it's 88, I would assume. So it's that era is when I started watching wrestling. The thing is, when I started to become, from there, I became basically a huge, insane fan my whole life, but I never backtracked. So I never really went back and watched older stuff. That's why when we have like a lot of guests on that are from like the early 80s or stuff like that, I don't know anything about it because I never watched wrestling that was on before I started being a fan of it. And I still don't to this day, it's just, I never did. I don't know why.
Did your brother get into wrestling too? Your brother did, right?
Yeah. Well, like into it, into like actually do it.
Did he get in the ring?
No, never in the ring. Ring announcing here or there, some commentary here or there, but actually physical stuff, never. And he is completely opposite than me. So I have a brother and sister, and they're kind of, they take after my mother. They're kind of like more on the geeky, smart, intelligent side. And I take more after my dad on like the athlete side.
So you're on the Titan Games. You're obviously a great athlete, an elite athlete, because 80,000 people tried out. What's your athletic background? You did sports in Jersey growing up?
Well, crazy enough now, The Rock just announced that over 100,000 people have tried out. The number has upped that he's been posting lately. But I played all sports up until high school from, when I was 4 years old till ninth grade. I did soccer, basketball, baseball, track. I was a real good athlete at everything I did. It's just I was so obsessed with wrestling. When I got to ninth grade, I was already researching wrestling schools and everything. So I knew right when I turned 16, I was allowed to become a wrestler at the schools that were in my area I was looking at with a parent signature. So when I was a freshman in high school, I was like, 14, I guess. And I dropped all sports and I knew I was waiting these 2 years. And all I did, I went to the weight room. It was just about getting muscles and muscles and muscles. That's all I cared about. And then, of course, I had my backyard wrestling federation where I wrestled with my friends on the trampoline to start teaching myself. And then it was just a countdown until I was 16. So sports were out of the picture once I hit high school.
And that's kind of the Robbie that I know. You're laser focused on one thing. You're working hard towards that. You got the blinders on and you're working towards your goal. What was it about wrestling? You must not have known a lot about, you know, the ins and outs of working and running the ropes and all that. Was it a certain star? Were you an Ultimate Warrior guy at the time, or a Sting guy? Like, who did you want to emulate?
Well, when I was a little kid, like, so I told you, I started watching when I was like four. So when I was like four, five, six, you know, my favorite wrestlers were Ultimate Warrior and Sting. I was never a Hulk Hogan guy. I was Warrior and Sting, which was cool because years later I got to wrestle Sting in a main event of Impact, and we beat him. Actually, it was a tag match. So, but anyway, he's a great guy. But so Warrior and Sting. So all through elementary school, I loved it. Then when I got to middle school, I got out of wrestling for like 2 years, like everyone kind of does. I was too cool for it. And then going into high school was like when the NWO came and the Attitude Era started. And that is when I got back into it in like, oh my God, like I'm doing this. It doesn't matter that I'm 120 pounds and like really small. Like I'm going to be a pro wrestler. It doesn't matter what everyone says. And, you know, I watched whatever you watch, Beyond the Mat, another documentary here or there. So and you try to find stuff online. So I started to like try and learn about this backstage stuff. You know, I would go to local independent shows by my house. A promotion ran right around the block from my house that I could walk to, and they ran once a month. So I would go early and like watch all the wrestlers. I'd stay late to try and talk to them. I remember like Steve Corino and Simon Diamond being on those shows, Little Guido, you know, like local guys from the Northeast. But I really tried to like look, size them up and say, well, you know, they're not that big. If they could do it, I could do it, and whatever. And that promotion was who eventually ended up opening up a wrestling school, which is the one that I ended up going to.
120 pounds, was that, you know, at the height you are now at 120 pounds?
I might be, I don't even know. Maybe I'm not 100, maybe 130 pounds, 40. I don't know what I was in high school. I mean, I was skinny. You know what I mean? I was skinny and ripped. Maybe a freshman, 120, 30, 40. I forget. How old do people weigh when they're in high school? I don't know.
You know, for me, 300, but I don't think that's a good sample. But,
yeah, I was very small. You know, I was a scrawny kid. You know, I was ripped and stuff, but I was pretty skinny. And as you see me now, I'm not a tall guy. So you definitely didn't look at me, especially back then, and say, yeah, sure, you're going to be a pro wrestler. You know, people, not that people laughed at me, but nobody believed that I was going to follow through. Because remember, this was in the whatever mid-90s, whatever, 96. I was in high school, 97. Like nobody, like small guys weren't as normal back then as they are now.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even have a cruiserweight division anymore because everybody's a cruiserweight.
Exactly.
Things have changed, but and you're not really, you know, kind of a high flyer type, but being smaller, when you started seeing guys like Rey Mysterio or Chris Benoit or Chris Jericho, did that inspire you at all, or were you still kind of focused on these main event types?
No, I mean, I guess that's what in my head made me say, dude, no matter what, I could do this. Because I knew, I mean, clearly Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrero and these guys weren't the biggest guys. So I said, if they could find a way, I could find a way. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's what deep inside gave me hope. But I don't know if I really thought about it too much. I think I just didn't care. I just wanted to be a wrestler. I don't think I thought that I couldn't, you know? Like you said, I'm very, when I love something and I choose that I'm going to do it, I do it, you know? I'm very, my work ethic is good when I give a fuck. And I gave a fuck about being a wrestler, and I knew I wanted to do it, and I was all in. A lot of people get into wrestling nowadays that just, you know, people expect things that get handed to them or it's going to happen overnight. You know, I enjoyed the ride. I enjoyed the journey. I liked driving 6 hours for $10 and, you know, all that. I liked everything that came with becoming a wrestler.
We'll talk a little bit about that, but it's funny when you look back at it. You know, I think of, you know, the fact I always wanted to own a music school, but I built a music school. I framed it. I built it. I drywalled it. I did the ceiling of it, wanting to own a music school. But when I look back on it, the best times of my life were building that damn school, you know? So it's like, for you, those rides for the $10 and the beginning parts are probably things you didn't appreciate at the time, but you look back at and those were the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's the excitement, you know. It's you know, that every show you do at the time, you're taking a step up, so it's fun and exciting. Who am I going to meet at the show that I could connect with that can help me get into another promotion? Or who am I going to have a really good match tonight where I could get noticed and maybe get a magazine article or get another booking out of it or get a pay raise or get into a promotion, one of the good promotions where I could get looked at by WWE? You know, it's fun because you're constantly going up a ladder. You're constantly trying to do more things, and you know, it's a journey. And remember, I was still a kid. So, you know, I started wrestling when I was 16. So when I was really heavily doing the indies at 17 and 18 and 19, dude, I was in college. I still lived with my parents. I was a young kid. So I had no other real life worries in the world. So it was exciting for me. I kind of grew up because I didn't live at college. I commuted to college during the week. That way I could travel for wrestling on the weekends. So like my going away to college was kind of driving to Georgia this weekend or driving to Rhode Island this weekend. I drove with older guys too because I was so young. So I kind of grew up and learned a lot about life from, you know, those rides to wrestling shows.
16 years old. You finally get it. You're waiting on it. You begin training at Kevin Knight's camp in Woodland, New Jersey. And you debuted against Chad Harwick October 1st, 2000. What was that like to go from trainee to wrestler in 4 months? And how good of a camp was that now, looking at now your experience doing clinics and all that kind of stuff? I mean, I know you're not trying to, but, you know, what was that experience for you?
Well, it's funny that you say Chad Harwick. It's actually Chad Warwick. And the reason I laugh is because, well, I joined wrestling school with three of my good friends. And two of them quit before the first match. And I haven't spoken to either of those two in probably years. And then the other one is still one of my best friends. That's Chad Warwick. I wrestled him in my first match, and then he retired, and he beat me. And he still makes fun of me about it today that he still has a win over me with a DDT. But yeah, he's still one of my good friends, but he quit also. He realized just wrestling wasn't for him. The other two realized that wrestling wasn't for them. And my first match against him was actually on my 17th birthday, and it was after about 3.5 months of training, and it was a student show in front of, you know, family and friends. But once I got that little taste of being in front of an audience, that's when I was like, dude, this is as awesome as I thought it was gonna be. Like, why would anyone not want to do this? I never understood why my friends quit or anything. And yeah, I was all in from there. You know, it was just me. So I just turned 17, so now this school was about 40 minutes from where we live, so I'm driving three times a week to the wrestling school by myself, still training. I'm driving to shows all over by myself. I was all alone, but I didn't care. I was loving every minute of it.
Now, your name was Rob Echoes. And was that your name from the very beginning? Rob Echoes?
Yeah, I needed a name, and there was a clothes brand called Echo Gear. And I was in wood shop class because I was still in high school. He had the Echo shirt on, and I literally just said, Rob Echoes. And then the spelling became E-C-K-O-S, and that was it. That's the story.
I mean, it's good. It's a cool name, like Old Navy, you know, or Nordstrom. So,
hey, Echo. I used to wear Echo brand shit.
Yeah. Rob FUBU.
Oh my god, that might have actually been thought of. I don't know. I might have even had that as one of the possibilities.
You might want to Google that one. So, with your career starting, your parents, you're a kid, you're also going to college, you eventually get your degree and you start teaching as a teacher as you're kind of wrestling. How supportive was your parents, your family, your loved ones about your dreams of wrestling?
Well, my mother is always scared of anything I'm doing. Like, she's still scared to this day. Like, even if the match is taped already and I'm sitting next to her on a couch and we're watching it on TV, she's still scared of her out of her mind. And, you know, just she doesn't like me getting hit or anything. She freaks out. My dad was happy that I was doing something, you know, athletic, because even though he wasn't really a wrestling fan, he was into, you know, the fact that I was doing something physical, he enjoyed watching. But the fact that I was still going to school and stuff and working and everything and kind of had a head on my shoulders, I guess they were supportive and they knew how much I loved it. So they were behind it in that sense. So I never really had a problem with them trying to keep me from it. It did take me longer to graduate college than it should have. I graduated in probably like 7 years because I went, one semester I didn't go. 2 years I went part-time. I just went the slow process because I was so like, I only care about wrestling. Like, you know what I mean? I just wasn't taking four classes at once. But, you know, I eventually did finish. I got my bachelor's degree in physical education and health. And, yeah, immediately from graduating college, I got hired in a district that it was very hard to get a job in to become a school teacher.
Did you think at that time maybe the wrestling thing was in your rearview mirror?
No, I used it as like, oh, well, now I have a salary and benefits and I have real money and stuff and a real job. So now I really could, you know, have enough money to on the weekends, you know, do every possible tryout or seminar or whatever I have to do to make a name for myself. Because at that time it was like, all right, I've already been wrestling almost 10 years. I've done a million WWE, you know, dark matches and extra work and tryout matches to the point where, you know, I really thought I was going to get hired a few times and I didn't. So I was just like, I'm already in my late 20s. I know I'm good enough. I'm in great shape. I could speak. Like, I'm very confident in myself. And I just said, I'm going to do every tryout. Because at that time, you know, TNA started doing tryouts. And I think maybe Dragon Gate or this, whatever it was, I was doing it. I was going to get somewhere that had some TV exposure. And I was going to make a name for myself. And then I actually, and I probably, you know, this is actually a first because I've never said this on a podcast, but I actually signed a contract with Lucha Libre USA. They were on MTV. Do you remember that?
I do, but I'm picking myself off the floor because, you know, you're not the first Lucha guy I think of.
Yeah, I know. Well, so one of the writers for the show went to my gym and we talked regularly and he knew how good I was and stuff and always said he would try and find a spot for me. So they had this masked character that he came up with. I was going to do it. I signed my contract. I was ready to start with them. And then and right after I signed my contract with them is when I got offered my contract from TNA. And I don't know if you want to jump to that, to how that all came about, to tell that story.
We will. I just want to, real quick before that, you're just hustling. Like, you're wrestling everybody anywhere in the Northeast, especially.
Everywhere. The Jersey. Everywhere.
You appear in a, you start doing, you know, these dark match things and these one-shot appearances and showing up. How does that start to come about where an indie guy is now, you know, able to get inside the door at WWF events?
So back in the day, it was really hard to become an extra. You basically had to be one of the top indie guys. At least that's like the era of when I started. And one of the places to get recognized for a promoter to have a hookup to send his best guys for extra work in WWE was the ECWA ran by Jim Kettner. He's the guy who like originated the Super 8 tournament and everything. You know what that is?
I'm aware. Yes.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, the Super 8 tournament was, you know, the place to be before Ring of Honor, before any of that. If you were in the Super 8, like you were, all those eight guys went on to big and better things every year. He would find talent that was untapped and untouched and he would, you know, make them stars. Anyway, I started working full time for him. It was close. I was from Jersey. That was in Delaware. He loved me. And, you know, he, after a few months there, he said he wanted to send me, you know, to WWE, thought I was ready. So the first thing I ever did was a commercial for the Royal Rumble with Kurt Angle. And then he started sending me to TVs. And it was like me, Matt Stryker, Mike Kruel, who ended up getting signed to OVW. And then he later, when he got released, just quit wrestling for good. But there was a few other good guys that he would send. And I remember the first time we ever got sent, it was in Hershey, PA. And I walked in and the first person we saw in the locker, me and John Walters, he was there too, was Triple H. And he was the only guy in there. That was like, oh my God, this is really happening. And he came up to us and he wished us luck for the night and everything. And yeah, that was it. And then from there on in for the next
few. Who was your match against in that first one? Was it against John Walters?
No, well, for the first probably 15 times I went there, I didn't even do anything. I mean, there's so many times you go there and you just sit around and get paid and do nothing if they don't have anything that night, you know?
So what was your first WWF match? Extra work?
My first actual match was against Matt Morgan on SmackDown. And ironically enough, Matt Morgan's first ever TV match was against Zack Ryder before Zack Ryder was signed, and his second ever TV match was against me.
Now, explain why that's ironic, because Zack Ryder's name was?
I don't know. What was his name? Matt Cardona?
Wasn't he in Echoes? What am I thinking of? His last name wasn't Echoes?
No, Myers.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Brett and Brian Myers.
So you bring that up about Zack Ryder because, of course, you guys are friends, but...
Yeah, but I mean, just also, I mean, think about that. It's kind of weird, you know? Zack Ryder was a jobber. I was a jobber.
For sure. When you're doing these extra matches, who else did you work against? Who else beat the crap out of you?
Let's see. I did one against Mark Henry on SmackDown. I wrestled Kofi on ECW. The Dicks. You know, it wasn't a match, but one of the most famous things I ever did, and it actually made the DVD for Raw's Greatest Moments, was when I was when I got beat up on the highway by Edge when he was dressed up like Ric Flair. Did you know that was me?
That was you?
That was me. Don't go back and watch it.
Oh, we're watching it, and we're watching that damn 2002 Royal Rumble commercial, guys. You guys should tweet that. So let's talk a little bit about this reputation you have and something you alluded to earlier, the making connections, the trying to get another spot, the showing up everywhere. It was kind of something you got a rap for. I've heard it over and over again by, you know, from Al Snow to D'Lo. How did you get this reputation as this guy? It sounds to me like you were a guy who would not take no for an answer. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, that's how you always got to be. And it's, you know, you always want to be doing more or making yourself more important. So whether it was on the indies, I'm basically just trying to connect with every promotion I could. So whoever I wrestle that night, I'm going to, you know, after a match, I'm going to get your phone number. We're going to exchange info, and I'm going to ask you what other places that you wrestle, and can you get me in those places? And then I'm going to keep doing that to get into more and more places. And then when I get on a promotion that I'm working for, I'm going to see who are the big stars on the show, and I'm going to ask the promoter if I could work with those guys so I could get better by wrestling those guys and make connections with those bigger stars. When I was in TNA, it's making sure it's going up to the web people and saying, hey, can I have my own web show called The List? It's going to wardrobe and saying, hey, can we add this stuff to my gear? I'm just constantly trying to do things to always keep myself out there and refresh myself and to remind people that I'm still there. And that, you know, it doesn't matter the amount of people that, like, just talking about the TNA stuff, like how I created my own web show and that kind of stuff. Like, sure, maybe not that many people saw it on the web, but it gave me something to do, and some people saw it, you know? So you could constantly keep doing things to make yourself relevant and seem important.
And also, it helped you get better at it too, right?
A thousand percent. You know, I don't sit around and just... I don't just sit around. I'm constantly on the up and up and trying to do things. You got to make moves, man. That's how people succeed.
So during this time, pre-TNA, who are your running buddies? Who are your friends? People we might know, people that maybe we should know about?
Well, it's you. I don't know if you do. I mean, one of them's still my best friend. The other one I haven't talked to in years. But the two guys that I rolled with were Josh Daniels, who did a lot of 01 stuff in Japan and Ring of Honor. And the other one is Damian Adams, who right now runs a hell of a successful wrestling school called Team Adams, where, he trained Deonna Purrazzo, who now just signed with NXT, and a lot of other great people train there. But those were the two guys. We all joined wrestling school at the same time together, and we kind of would always help each other get on shows and traveled everywhere together. But Josh now has quit wrestling, and I'm still very close with Damian Adams. In fact, I just wrestled him at House of Hardcore a few weeks ago.
The friendships with, you know, Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins, they're kind of from the same area. How did that come about?
I mean, to be honest, man, like, we did indies and stuff together. You know, they trained by Mikey Whipwreck at NYWC in New York, and I worked there regularly, so that's how we got to know each other. But oddly enough, we were just kind of, you know, locker room acquaintances. I wouldn't really call us friends. And then, just in the past few years is when we really got to know each other well. I mean, Hawkins was in TNA for a little bit with the whole Jeff Jarrett angle thing, so we get to hang and get to know each other well there. And then Zack Ryder is just, I mean, he's a Robbie E. hater, so we just text each other, making fun of each other all the time, and text and social media. But, I mean, deep inside, he He knows he stole my gimmick and wishes he was me.
The reason I bring them up is because they demanded to take a picture of me because they were so proud they met me before you did. You know, they sent you the picture, you know, and of course they listen to the show and I love their show, the Major Brothers Wrestling Figure Pod. But let's talk about TNA now. Now, we're talking about a kid who, you know, 2001, you know, you start training at the age of 17 and you start doing some appearances on Explosion. Now, Explosion, in a lot of ways, was the kind of, the junior show to the TNA weekly pay-per-views, but also served as kind of an entryway point for some younger wrestlers. What was your entryway into starting to do these Explosion matches?
NWA Wildside was a promotion over 12 hours from where we lived. And we knew that they would send a lot of guys from there for Explosion jobber matches. So me, Josh Daniels, and Damian Adams drove for $30, not each, combined $10 each, which we used for Waffle House after. But anyway, we drove over 12 hours, wrestled, and drove 12 hours right back in hopes for after our match for them to say, hey, you guys are good. Do you want to do an Explosion match? And it worked. So they invited us to Nashville to do an Explosion match. So we got to do a few of those. But again, it was, you know, there was no money. It was driving to Nashville 15 hours or flying yourself. It was just for the hopes that you did really good, one in a million, and they wanted to use you full time. And, you know, I always had good showings when I was there, but nothing panned out. I wrestled Josh one match. I wrestled Norman Smiley. I wrestled me and Damien teamed against Team Canada, who was Eric Young and Johnny Devine at the time. So, you know, we had good matches, but nothing ever came from it, really. Same kind of with my WWE stuff. It was always like you had a good showing, but there's really nothing for you.
So we're talking about 2003, and you make your, you know, you become known in TNA 2010. You're just like hustling, doing shows are like every weekend for like 7 years. Is that what's going on in your life?
Well, I mean, it really was 10 years because I'd started in 2000. So, I mean, for 10 years, I was just doing shows every weekend. Yeah, just in hopes of something happening. I was always regularly changing up my characters. I was Rob Echoes, but I was the Platinum Papa, and I was a pop star who sang on the way to the ring. I was a valedictorian who wore a cap and gown, and I was like a creepy guy who graduated college but was still in college. I was part of the Moxie family, and I was like a Guido guy. I went through so many characters trying to switch things up to just get noticed somewhere. And, you know, like I said so many times, it was so close to happening, and it just never did. And I just wanted to break somewhere. And that is when Lucha Libre USA offered me a contract. And without hesitation, I signed it because I just heard the words MTV and, you know, contract. And I was just like, I'm in. And then after signing that, it was a few months till I was going to start. And in that time waiting to start is when I had my tryout match with TNA.
Who did you contact with at TNA when you are making contact with them? Of course, you're talking to everybody. You're probably got business cards. You're telling everybody about yourself. You're changing your name. You're every gimmick but a ninja. You're doing everything. Who was it? Jeff Jarrett?
No. So I did a Terry Taylor had like this tryout seminar thing that Tom Brandy ran where he brought in Terry Taylor, and Terry Taylor was going to watch the show and evaluate the guys. It was like $500 or something, but I didn't care. I did it and I did really good. He liked my look and my match and everything. And he said to contact him and I'll see about getting me a tryout. I did. I had high hopes, and I contacted him that week. No answer. Nothing happened. Finally, I hit him up a few more times and like, I don't remember what it was, 4 or 5 months later, he said that if I could get myself to Florida, whatever, and I was in the area, potentially I could have a tryout match. So didn't care. That's that's definitely not 100% shot, but that's how much I wanted it.
How many times did you call him?
It was emails, but I mean, not like a million, probably 4 or 5 over waiting for him to answer. I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5, just until he answered. But he finally did. And because, I mean, when he saw me in person, he did say that he wanted to get me one. It's just I kind of took that as, wow, I'm going right away. Meanwhile, it took 4 or 5 more emails and a few more months for it to happen. But Oh,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say they also said they couldn't bring me down. I had to get down there on my own, so I had to buy my own flight for this big risk to go down there in hopes of possibly getting a match. So I get to Florida. I'm there like a day early, and that's when I talk to Terry, and he says, hey, you're most likely not getting a match, but you could still come. So this is great. I just flew myself here. I'm not getting a match, and I'm just going to go here to, like, you know, sit around and watch everyone else. So I get there, and it's 2 days of tapings, and I'm there day one, and there's two other guys there. One is Xavier, who I knew very well, former Ring of Honor champion, and the other is Bobby Fish, who I had wrestled before. He was doing Japan stuff, and I knew him. So they were looking at them too, not me. I wasn't getting a match. Xavier wrestled a dark match that night against Doug Williams. It was good, I guess. I don't really remember it. I do nothing. The next day happens. You know, Bobby Fish is going to have his dark match, I guess. And I'm eating and catering with Simon Diamond, who I knew from IWF years ago. He would help train at the school sometimes. And we're eating together, and he was an agent, and he makes a joke to Vince Russo as he walked by. And he goes, hey, Vince, you wanted to do a Jersey Shore character. This guy's from Jersey. Exactly, the exact sentence he said. He just made a joke. And I mean, now that you know Vince,
fucking Matt, Vince, like, Russo.
He literally, and I remember it like it was yesterday. He made that joke. Vince is walking by. He doesn't know me from nothing. He just stops and stares at him, and he goes, you're from Jersey, bro? And I go, yeah. And he goes, could you get a girl? And I mean, I didn't even know what he was talking about, but I was just like, yeah. And then Pat went over and talked to him for like 5 minutes, and they came back and they were like, spike your hair up tonight. He wants to see you try like a Jersey Shore character thing. So luckily, I was a huge fan of the show. Me and my, and this is what I say. So, well, I'll actually say that at the end. But so luckily, I was a Jersey Shore fan anyway. Me and my wife love the show. We watch it every week. And I am from Jersey in that area, so it came easy to me. And luckily also, I was growing my hair out already. So I spiked my hair up, which I had never done before in my life. And, you know, me and Bobby Fish had the match, which, mind you, remember, they were looking at Bobby Fish way more than they were looking at me. But Vince and Dixie went into the audience, watched the match live. I fist pumped on the way to the ring. And they said after my entrance, they left and said, give them a contract. And then they ended up saying it was one of the best dark matches at the time ever. And I walked back through the curtain, and I remember D'Lo pulled me aside, who I didn't know either. And he just goes, hey, kid, I think you just got yourself a job. And then immediately they put me onto the set with Christy Hemme for a promo and in character, which I never done the character. And they had me do a promo, and I did a really good promo. And then, like, I was in the office 10 minutes later signing a contract. Now, mind you, I had signed a contract with Lucha Libre USA that I didn't tell them because I was so scared that this moment would get taken away from me.
Right.
So I signed the contract, and then it ended up, I told them a few days later, and over those next 2 weeks, they actually had to work out a deal with Lucha Libre USA to let me out of the contract. And in return, they sent Hernandez to one of their shows, and they let Hernandez like work a show for him to make the deal like even. So I got out of it. But the whole thing with that story is if Pat Kenny, and this is if he never made that joke to Vince Russo as Vince walked by, none of this would have ever happened. I would have been Rob Echoes that night. I would have just had a good match, and nothing would have came of it.
You know, it's crazy, too, because it's not just circumstance, right? It's you've been preparing for this moment for 10 years, and you were all in. Yes, I got a girl. Yes, I'll spike up my hair. I'll do a promo. You had to know in a lot of ways, like, everything was on the line and that this was your shot.
Oh, I mean, I completely did. And that's why when I'm put under pressure, normally I do pretty well. And I mean, I killed it. But I mean, you know, I'll admit it, it's a perfect case of right place, right time. And Jersey Shore was hot. And I was from Jersey and I was there. And it all just kind of clicked and worked. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit that. But, you know, what we'll get into later, too, is, you know, this Jersey Shore goofy character could have been, you know, short lived and lasted for 3 months, 6 months, similar to like Cookie did. I mean, she was there under a year. There was nothing for her, and that could have been me too. But because they saw more in me, they saw how hard I worked. They saw how talented I was and knowledgeable that I was of pro wrestling is why I was able to break through and, you know, have a, you know, pretty long career there.
So you're wrestling Bobby Fish in your debut, you know, you're kind of, somehow, you know, you become this X Division guy. And of course, at the time, the X Division, no one still knows what the hell it is or stands for, but it had some very cutting edge matches, and you win the
I lost to a child and David Arquette in the past month.
Yeah, you lost to a child. But you, to win the X Division championship for the first time, you beat Ring of Honor champion Jay Lethal.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, that's not the first time I've beaten Jay Lethal. See, me and him had a very long feud throughout, you know, in and out of New Jersey. He was one of my first, like, big feuds that I had here. So we knew each other very well at the time.
And, you know, other victories, you know, were over Amazing Red. You know, you're wrestling Kazarian, you're wrestling Kendrick, Suicide. Who was Suicide back then? Was it Daniels?
I believe it was Dan. Yeah, it was Daniels.
So yep. What's your approach? I mean, no training in the world gets you ready for working with these guys, or were you just ready for your experience? You know, these are very high impact, high level, experienced X Division, you know, wrestlers. How did you feel being in the ring with these guys?
I mean, most of these guys are guys like them in their style. I had wrestled, you know, all the years, believe it or not, you know, it's not the style. It's not who I am. And but it is a style that, at least back then, I could have kept up with more. And, you know, I could go with guys. You know, I'm a good wrestler. But the thing I always found, I always stayed true to myself. And I said, you know, I can't fly as high as these guys. I can't hit as hard as them. I'm more of a character guy. I know it's what I'm good at. So I always went the complete opposite direction of everyone else. And I think that's why I had good matches with them. Because you go back and watch some of those matches I had with Lethal, and there's some really good matches. And people really liked our feud. I think I was just bringing something different to TNA at the time, because everyone was just so into having like good matches and cool moves and whatever. So when I came with like this full-on character and just kind of being more of a basic wrestler but one that could go, it was just like kind of different. So I think we gelled really well, and I loved wrestling those guys. And,
you know, meanwhile you're playing to an audience of someone who's very receptive to those kind of things, you know, more character than wrestling, more promo than matches. Vince Russo, what was your relationship like working with Vince and TNA? Was he instrumental for you besides that initial thing?
Yeah. I mean, he was always cool about it and whatever. You know, you got to remember too, I'm new. So when Vince was there, I don't even remember how long he was there after I got there, but it wasn't that long. Was it maybe a year and a half or something like that? So, you know, that's my first year there. I'm still kind of, you know, not breaking out yet. I'm staying kind of quieter. I'm not fully being myself. So I just did what I was told. I didn't really go out of my way to change things or complain about things yet. So, you know, my dealings with him were just kind of what he told me to do kind of deal, you know. But he did always like me and get a kick out of me, and he knew I was close with Pat. And then Simon Diamond, and he was close to Pat, and he knew I was from Jersey, and he liked Jersey guys and stuff. So I know he liked me, but we didn't have that much, believe it or not, as well as we seem to know each other now, we didn't have that much interaction back then.
So TNA, you're establishing this character, you're wrestling these incredible matches, you know, Kazarian in a Ultimate Hex match. I'm not trying to laugh, but you're wrestling
with the Young Bucks. Ultimate Hex with the Young Bucks.
With the Young Bucks, some of the best wrestlers in the world, D-Von, Rob Van Dam, Christopher Daniels, you know, all these, Samoa Joe,
AJ Styles,
Rob Van Dam. What memory, we don't talk a lot about your wrestling matches. What's a match you feel like when you look back on, you go, yeah, man, I worked for this and I really brought it in the ring that time.
There was a time, I guess, I figure I'm 35 now. What was I? Maybe 27, 28. I was, you know, I'm to sound cocky. Yeah, I'm in phenomenal shape now, but I was in like really, really good shape. I was jacked. You know, I was so tan. My hair was perfect. I was so gangster and boss and confident in myself. Like I was, that was when I was really, you know, I was, I was having good matches every week. I didn't care who I was in there with. I was really hungry and I wanted it. And, yeah, I mean, I didn't go into it being like, oh my God, I'm wrestling this guy with more experience, so that's a star. I went into it like, we're equals, and I'm going to keep up with you, and I want to make a name for myself. So I was, it's weird. It's kind of like a blur sometimes looking back at that stuff. But one of my favorite matches is when I won the X Division title from Jay Lethal at Turning Point 2010. 10 it was. That is one of my probably favorite matches of all time.
You got placed with Rob Terry, you know, in the role of what they call a heater, you know, a big guy, you know, in the kind of model of that Diesel Shawn Michaels thing. You know, did you enjoy having, you know, that muscle with you? How did you think it worked well with you and Rob Terry?
Well, I mean, perfect example of making something, making nothing into something. And this is where I do, you know, kind of say how, you know, I hustle and make things bigger than they are. I mean, they literally threw us together because both of our names were Rob. And I'm the one that came up with, you know, Big Rob and Bigger Rob. I'm the one that came up with the, you know, the red velvet rope and the list that we had. You know, we came out with the list where you were either on the list or you weren't on the list. And
a
he was
list?
My bounce.
Wait, a yep. list?
He, we had the list.
You had
go
a
back
list?
And watch it.
Did you put people on the list?
Oh, yeah. Well, people tried to get on the list. It was like he was a bouncer at a club. Oh, and yeah. If you weren't on the list, you didn't get through the door.
Right.
That was
right.
The gimmick.
No, I remember. So, I just think it's funny because there's been other lists lately in the world.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you go back to my show on TNAWrestling.com. It was called The List every week. But, you know, all that stuff, you know, we were supposed to be just two guys, and I made it into names and red velvet ropes and matching sweaters. And, you know, he was a bouncer, not a bodyguard. It was cool. It was, like, different. It wasn't just like a – it was a different version of being from the Jersey Shore, but it was also a version of not a comedy guy anymore, and it could actually be something. And, yeah, we just – we made it so freaking cool. I, you know, that character could still work today. I mean, the red velvet robe, Matt, a big seven-foot dude that's jacked wearing a tight pink sweater. I mean, you can't – you know, you can't make that shit up.
Well, I guess you can. But so it's awesome to me the way that your career's gone, because, you know, TNA had a revolving door and you're in there pretty much ensconced upper mid card, you know, for a long time. And then a lot of people remember you for this. A lot of people remember the bromance with Jesse Goddard, of course, a reality TV star. I was watching the season of Big Brother he was on. And I remember he started wrestling. And I think that's when I first started becoming aware of you. You know, you were working with Tara. And you were taking on everybody as the bromance. You got a lot of success. Looking back, what was your thought about being placed in a tag team and being placed in a tag team with Jesse?
Same kind of thing. Started off as kind of just like a two goofs together joke that turned into something more because we worked so well together. But again, it's like same with Rob Terry. Rob Terry was so green, and you know, he'll admit this to you. He was very inexperienced at the time, and him being with me made him better inside and outside of the ring just because he got more comfortable traveling with me and I brought out a different side of him. Same kind of with Jesse. I mean, Jesse was very green when we were together, and I just taught him a lot about wrestling inside and outside of the ring. So, you know, it made me better bringing him up to my level, and then he just got so good. And, you know, we were great as the bromans. I loved it. That was one of the best times of my career. And, you know, at Bound for Glory, TNA's biggest pay-per-view in San Diego, we won the tag titles. It was a moment I'll never forget. And, yeah, I enjoyed all the – me and him were just – we're still friends to this day, but we worked so well together.
With the bromans, you know, you started doing – you know, a lot of people don't put you and Japanese wrestling together, you know, but you started doing, you know, some of these you know, outbreak shows, Wrestle One shows. And of course, you know, who can forget your classic against, you wrestled the Great Muta on Impact Wrestling. Like,
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Did you enjoy that? You know, how much of a factor is a language barrier working with guys like Muta and other Japanese wrestlers?
You know, it's kind of like that. They all speak broken English, if not full English broken, for the most part. You know, you're just kind of mouthing it and with the movements, and it seems a lot harder than it is to put together. But I really enjoy wrestling in Japan. But the bromance were received very well, like the DJZ doing his DJ stuff and me and Jesse with the muscles and being kind of like overly colorful in character. They really got a kick out of us. So we had some fun Japan matches. One match I remember with the Wolves, and then I forget the one guy's name, but his partner was Kaz Hayashi from the WCW days, who was phenomenal. And we had this awesome
Kondo.
Yes, Kondo and Kaz Hayashi. We had this awesome three-way tag in, you know, Sumo Hall for the Great Mood Anniversary show, and that was a moment I won't forget. That's actually when we won the tag titles for a second time. And, yeah, you don't know. Come on. I did a tour of Noah. I'm like a Japan guy, Matt. You didn't know that?
No, I did. I did.
Could you see me on a bus in Noah with all these Japanese guys driving, not understanding what's going on?
I know. You must have starved to death. You must have been like the middies with the headbangers.
You should see me when we go to the rest stops and I have to ask them all, like, it's hard to order food at the rest stops. You use like machines and like I don't understand when they're explaining to me like what food to get, and then I'm trying to ask like how much protein's in it and meat, and like they're all just looking at me like I got like 10 heads. It's pretty funny.
With the you know, with the thing with the bromance started kind of getting, you know, dialed back a little bit, and you did the split, you know. Was that the only way that was going to end, is, you know, break up the tag team, and you guys faced each other at Slammiversary. You got the win over Jesse. That was pretty much it. You were looking to do more singles and that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, they wanted to split us up. I don't think it was time yet. You know, we were heels. We had DJ Z with us. We were lovable heels. Even though you hated us so much, we were funny. We would come out walking on the mic. We were, you know, it was just, there was more to us. And I think they could have turned us babyface at that time, similar to a way of kind of like what New Day had turned into, like a trio. Because, you know, again, we had DJ Z with us. It was the three of us. And we were very hip and in style and like new to like things going on in the world, you know. Like when the selfie stick was cool and all that stuff, we had a lot of modern stuff. So I think we easily could have been like, you know, fun loving baby faces, making fun of the heels. And they didn't do it. You know, they split us up. We had our feud. I had good matches with Jesse and everything, but then I was just kind of a baby face lingering that they didn't do anything with. Same with Jesse, he's a heel. So then they put us back together and made us baby faces. And at that point it was kind of forced. And it just wasn't organic, and it just kind of, it just didn't really work.
So with this is a time where, late 2017, you know, not that long ago, and there's a lot of stuff coming. God, all the stuff going on in Impact with, you know, Anthem and then Jarrett and then all this stuff going on. We started seeing every day somebody saying, I'm no longer with Impact. I'm no longer with Impact. What was it like in those days? And I mean, really the whole time, this constant upheaval, restart, what network we're going to be on. And then towards the end there, what was the morale like at Impact?
You know, amongst my group, like my rolling buddies were like DJ Z and Eddie Edwards and EC3 and Spud. We always all loved wrestling so much, and we all had a good time with each other so much that we kind of just did our own thing, still had good matches. And it just, I know it's kind of weird to say it, but as much as all the chaos that you said just went on, you're completely true, is completely true. It's just, I kind of just got to the point where I said, all right, until they call me and they say TNA's closed down or I don't work here anymore, I don't give a shit. I'm not going to worry about any of it. Like, it got to the point where I just didn't give a fuck because it kept changing by the week. So every week we'd have a new meeting with someone new in charge telling us all these new things that were going to happen. And I wasn't even fucking listening because at this point, I mean, it just, you knew it wasn't going
to
be true.
Well, I mean, I happen to know you have trouble paying attention to conversations that last.
Well, that too. Minutes. I was probably tweeting in my phone, yeah. So, which I'm going to start doing soon anyway.
So you lose your last match. Swoggle, someone I like very much, lost to Aaron Rex, of course, Damian Sandow or Miz Dow, and Rockstar Spud in a tag team match. And then you lost to Aaron Rex again in your final match. You know, and then you announced on Twitter, of course, because you're Robbie, that you were leaving Impact. Dude, you were there a long time. This was a big part of your career. This was kind of your big shot to kind of get noticed. Was this a good thing or a bad thing? Or, like, how did it come about?
I think it was just basically, you know, there was, you know, years throughout my Impact career where, you know, I was making very good salaried money and everything was great. You know, I got family, I got twins. So at this time now with twins, contracts have changed. I'm on a per appearance deal. So even though I had a very good high per appearance, if you're not being used, you're still not being used. So they sent me to Japan and they sent me, you know, wherever doing this and that, but I wasn't being used at TV. So I just felt, I'm at the point now where I'm not waiting around and hoping you know, to be used in hopes to make money. It's just, it wasn't worth it for me. And I felt that Robbie E had so much more to offer, not only the wrestling world, but just the world in general. And at the time, at 34 years old, I just, I said, it's kind of like now or never. So I said, I'm going to leave here, see what's up with WWE, see what else is out there. And now within a year, I had the PC tryout, which went well, and I'm a part of the Rock's new show. So I'd say it was a good choice.
So you,
and I have one of the best podcasts in the world with you.
I mean, really, it is a pretty damn good podcast. And I hope people are enjoying this episode because I'm enjoying it too. And we're getting to why Robbie E ended, because this was a career that started for you when you, a joke was made. Vince Russo's like, oh, you're from Jersey, bro. And that's it. And next thing you know, it's years later, you're leaving. How did you feel about leaving the security of, even though it was on a per appearance deal, how did you feel about losing that safety net?
I always said that years ago, I always said I would always have a place in TNA, like if an afterlife, I would have been an agent there or been involved with, somehow I was very close with, the people I should have been close with, and I was liked, and I always did what I was asked. I mean, I've lost to midgets and girls and whoever. It doesn't matter. I do anything. I'll make a fool of myself. I'm a team player. I don't give problems. I always do a good job. But that TNA wasn't the same TNA that I left. It doesn't mean there wasn't still talented guys there and everything, and there still is talented guys there. It's just it wasn't the same place. And so it wasn't hard to leave. I didn't feel like I was leaving something it's just being very honest. I felt like I was just leaving an independent wrestling federation, and no different than when I leave an independent wrestling federation every weekend and I fly to my next one. So that's what it felt like to me at the time. That's what made it easy.
On that per appearance deal, like if you did a day of TV, was that one appearance, even though it was several tapings?
No, I mean, it depends. Everyone's got different deals and it was always changing. Sometimes it was, sometimes no, but for me, if I would have wrestled three times, you get paid three times, but they always tried to, different people had different deals. So it depends who you are.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so you leave TNA, was there any thought at that time of leaving Robbie E behind and creating something new for yourself? Or did you feel like you needed to use that, cachet you had built up as Robbie E to get those independent bookings?
I still will use Robbie E time and time again if someone wants it, or if it's a smaller place where that's what I'm known for, that's cool. I'll come in as it. But I did already have in my mind that it was time for a change. And that is how the Robert Strauss brand was born.
So now tell us, you're out of TNA. Tell us about the Robert Strauss brand.
Well, I basically thought of it. It's and we talked about him before, my brother, but he actually came up with kind of doing the motivation thing because he said Gary V and he said, you're Robbie E. It works perfect. You could just keep the name and become a motivation guy and Gary V, Robbie E, same thing. So that's where I first got it. And then I didn't know who Gary V was. I started looking into him a little bit and Tony Robbins and stuff. But I did end up saying, I think it's time just to switch it. Jersey Shore has played out, even though it's back now. It's just played out, in wrestling where I needed a change and I wanted something brand new.
Russo brings it up every goddamn time. You know that, right? He's like,
yeah, but he's an idiot. It wouldn't work now on TV. Yeah.
He's just like, Robbie E gets rid of Robbie E and then what comes back? Jersey Shore.
Yeah, but it's still different right now. I don't know.
I agree. As an observer, as a fan, I think it was right to leave it behind. I think the Robert Strauss brand is a fresh, new idea. And you started working it a little bit on the independent circuit, of course, still getting bookings as Robbie E, because that's what people know from those years on Impact. And the news comes out, as I'm working with you, you don't tell me about it, but as I'm working with you, that two names at an NXT tryout was Chelsea Green and Robbie E. That must have been a call you've been looking for a while.
It finally happened. I was looking forward to going to the trial. I knew going in that it didn't matter who I was or what my past was. And a lot of people would go into that not with an ego, but with kind of like a man, you know, hopefully I'm treated this way. And that I went into it knowing I'm going to be a nobody. I'm going to be with guys. Half the guys are untrained because they're former pro athletes, and I'm going to be treated just like them. You know, we're going to be running the ropes and bumping stuff that I learned 18 years ago. I'm going to be doing with all these guys like it's my first day. And I went into it with zero ego, staying positive. I busted my ass. I got in better shape than I was in. I worked hard. And I made a good showing. I cut a really good promo. You know, I was the oldest guy there at a 40, you know, almost 50 guys there. I was the oldest guy at 34 at the time. And I was the smallest guy. So I weighed the least and I was the oldest. And I kept up with everybody. And I'm talking pro athletes and stuff. Because it's not just pro wrestling stuff that I had to relearn. It's, I mean, you're doing fitness stuff in the gym and you're running until you're, you know, you're dropping all in a safe, you know, push yourself, you know, positive way. But I mean, it was hard, man, but I kept up. So I was proud of myself.
What does that trial look like? We saw some footage, you know, from WWE of, you know, like the Robert Strauss character, you know, you did a promo, you did you do a match or did you just do fitness stuff? What's it like?
You do every, you for ours. I mean, I'm sure they're all different, but I mean, yeah, we did promos. We did a lot of drills throughout like the 2 days of just, you know, running the ropes and bumps and rolls and all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, you do some fitness stuff. And then the last day you do matches.
And, I guess the question everybody wants to know, you know, we saw that Chelsea Green got signed by WWE. She's in NXT doing matches. Is it unreasonable to maybe expect Robbie E? This is something I don't know, and I haven't asked you, and I want to know. Is it possible that one day, were you given indicators that maybe one day you would be in NXT?
I mean, here's the deal. Until something happens, it doesn't happen, and right now nothing's happened. But I mean, I will tell you this. It's where I want to be. And, you know, I had a really good showing there. You know, I can and I will say this. Like I said, I was proud of myself. I did really well. I showed that I could keep up. I showed that I belong. So, I mean, time will tell and we'll see what happens. But I had a good showing and it's definitely where I want to be.
Did you get good feedback from the coaches and stuff?
I did. I got great feedback. And, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, I knew previous. I mean, Steve Carino's the coach. Scotty Duhati's the coach. So I knew those guys from, you know, before the tryout. So, some of the others there too, I can't remember at the time, but I mean, I knew pretty much everyone and they all knew of me, even though they treated me. I mean, they treated me great, but I mean, like an equal to everyone else. But I mean, you know, everyone's a wrestling fan. I'm sure they've watched TNA at some point in the past 8 years to know who I am.
True, true. And of course, we would love to see you in NXT. Nothing would make me happier. And, you know, as a fan, I think, you know, as a fan who doesn't know anything else at all, you know, is that, just Robbie E looks to be like someone who should be a big star. And speaking of big stars, you're going to be on the Titan game. So what'd you do? Did you answer an ad or how did that come about?
Well, weirdly enough, I got a private message on Facebook from casting of that show saying that they saw my Dad Bod Destroyer muscle and fitness videos, which are the workouts I did with my little twins. And they thought they were hilarious and they loved that I was a twin fit dad. And they asked if I heard of the show and I would be interested. So we had a phone call. And then next thing I knew, I was on a plane to LA. And it was 120 of us for this final fitness combine thing. And then out of those 120, they chose like 60 for the final cast. And I got chosen for the final cast. Like that was so out of left field. It was crazy. I didn't even know what the show was. And now, like I said, over 100,000 people have applied to try and get on it. And they came to me. That's how important I am, Matt.
Dude, that's really important. And I mean, if you haven't seen Robbie E's Muscle and Fitness Dad videos, they're great. He bench presses his kids. He juggles his kids. I think you should have drawn the line at the shot put. I thought that was a little...
Well, and now they're too heavy. I can't lift them up anyway. They're like 25 pounds each. I can't do that.
Yeah, that's, you know, they're towards the other end of the dumbbell line, right?
Yeah.
Hey, so... When is the debut of when is the premiere? It's coming up right now, right?
Yeah, it is tomorrow, January 3rd is the premiere. NBC, the Titan Games, and it's 10 episodes. So tune in tomorrow, and then you know watch the journey because it is really an exciting show, dude. The set is freaking awesome. It looks like WrestleMania. There's like fire. It's rustic from like the movie 300. It's so cool.
And you must have been pretty comfortable filming it because you're so used to TV sets and stuff, right? Like, you probably, you were in your element when you were there?
Oh, totally. Yeah, a lot of, you know, we did in front of a live audience and stuff. I could have cared less. If anything, that helped me. Like, a lot of people were nervous to do it in front of people. Like, that was the one advantage I had, you know, the cameras and the lights and everything. That didn't faze me at all. So if people didn't have prior, you know, anything kind of TV experience stuff, they were, it definitely could have hurt them.
So before we go, let's talk about another pivotal moment in your life. I've told it from my viewpoint, and I've never heard it told from your viewpoint. I worked briefly with Terry Runnels on her podcast. I created a format. I don't even know if you know this. I created a format for the show. You know, that was when I did like 2 pages of like really good prep to give Terry for the show, probably the 3rd or 4th episode. And then she calls me and she goes, "Oh, we're going to have a guest." I'm like, "What are you talking about? We don't have guests." "Well, Robbie E is going to be on a show with me. We're going to have Robbie E." And I'm just like, "Robbie E, like, what the hell is going on?" All right, fine, you know. And Terry,
why? What was your show supposed to be about?
It was going to be about like something like her, something about her career, you know. That like it was all formatted and everything. Like it was like I had like we're going to talk about this, we're going to talk about that, we're going to talk about this, you know. And then I, at that point, I knew I was out the door anyway. And Terry and I are still good friends, but you know, it was just like, all right, fine, you know. And even in the segment before that, you can tell me and Terry weren't getting along on air. And then Robbie, you come on, and thank God, because you're so funny and you're so engaging, and you're making fun of Terry, and you made it a good point time. And then I heard from you a couple weeks later. So how did that come about that you had this idea and you thought of me for it?
So yeah, I had the idea why it ended from like right when I left Impact, because the first thing I said was, yeah, I'm going to start a podcast. And then I was like, no, I don't want to, because everyone has them and there's for no, you know. I don't like people that have them just to have them. You know, I want there to be a purpose behind it. A lot of people just have them to say, hey, I have a podcast.
Are you saying that Tommy Dreamer does that? Is that what you're saying? Tommy Dreamer?
Kind of, yeah. Even though he was messaging me all week asking him if I'm jealous that he's the number one podcast out there. And then I looked and I didn't even see him on the charts. But
yeah. Well, we'll let him think that. It's fine.
But anyway, so I had the concept and I said, man, like, what about like all the dudes that I watched like Sick Boy and Lodi and like I just thought of weird guys from like the late 90s WCW from my era of watching that kind of have like vanished. And I'm like, what happened to those dudes? Like, that would be cool to interview guys who are like non-existent, who actually haven't been on every other podcast and you don't see every weekend at every show. And then I thought of the idea and I contacted Court, who I'd spoken to previous, and I told him about it and he was sold. We had a phone call, he was sold on it, he loved the idea. He told me to basically just, you know, figure out who my host was going to be and, you know, do a pilot episode and send it to him and see if he likes it or whatever. So I toyed around with a few people that I would consider to be my hosts. It wasn't really working or whatever. And then I guess it just, I don't know, like, after I had the idea, if I did Terry's or if I did Terry's before I had the idea, but no. Whatever it was, somehow you clicked in my head and I remembered, because obviously when I was on the Terry episode, it seemed like you were very knowledgeable and had a good voice. Because, you know, I've done so many podcasts where they're just brutal and the guys I could just tell are goofs. But I obviously saw that you were talented enough. So I said, you know what? This guy seems decent. He's doing Terry's. Maybe he's hungry to get out in the podcast world. Let me run the idea by him. So I remember the first thing you said that you were busy, but then that you had a lot going on. But then right when I told you the idea was, you were like, fuck, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, that was when I was working on probably 7 podcasts. Like, 7.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing Pritchard, Schiavone, Dutch, Fair Play, and someone else. Oh, Terry, right? And so I'm just like, and then you brought that idea, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's really good. And then I ran it by Conrad. You know, Conrad's, to me, the podfather, right? So he's like, you know, he literally texted me, fuck yes, you know.
Nice.
So I'm like, that's it. And you know, the show's changed a little bit, but it's still the same. We're still gonna have the people like that your initial idea was, but people also like David Arquette and Tommy Dreamer, because we decided it doesn't have to be just Wyatt Ended about her career. It could be Wyatt Ended about a part of their career, right?
A portion of their career, yeah. And the cool thing that I love about it is, the show could go on forever. It'll never get old because every week is different because everyone has a different story. So it's always different every single week. And the fans can pick and choose whose story they want to hear, which is cool.
It's so rewarding that, you know, when you think about Robbie E. and Matt Kuhn started a podcast, and it's now 2019 at the very beginning, 2018 in with a million wrestling podcasts. We're like the fourth most downloaded, you know, wrestling interview podcast. We get great reception. We have great listeners. We have great fans. I'm not surprised, but it's pretty pleasing to see how it's worked out, right?
Yeah. No, I thought on numerous occasions, I thought, you know, I was going to hate you, and I'm just liking you more and more. It's kind of, I kind of don't like that I like you so much.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you see me and Robbie together, it's just like the smart, he looks like the smart, smaller guy, and I'm like the big dopey guy, you know?
But it's the other way around.
It's so funny. Well, guys, that is it. That is why Wyatt Ended with Robbie E. Is Wyatt Ended with Robert Strauss, I think. Is that the plan from this point on?
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, hey, I'm going with Robert Strauss. It's my real name. It's my Twitter and Instagram handles. Let's go with it for the show.
And are you going to change your phone number after the Titans debuts?
No, I'll keep my phone number the same.
All right, guys. Robbie, did you enjoy this? This was different. It's been a long interview, but it's been different than anything we've done. Did you enjoy this experience of being on Why It Ended?
Yeah, it was great. You know, I actually got serious for a while. Isn't that weird?
It is weird, but you're very serious. You know, that's one thing I would say, you know, because a lot of people just know you as a TNA guy. Oh, you're doing a podcast with Robbie E. And I'm like, dude's a hustler. Dude is laser focused. He's a hustler. He works hard. And not, you know, a lot of other wrestlers or wrestler types, you know, once you do the work for them, you're not that guy. And it's made this podcast great. What are you looking forward to in the future for Why It Ended, Robbie?
Just keep doing what we're doing, man. I mean, we're evolving. We're getting, I just want more and more people to know about it. I think it's so cool that me and you have gotten to the point where, you know, we're at conventions and I'm, you know, people are coming up to you for your autograph and shit. I'm at wrestling shows all over the world on a weekly basis where people are coming up to me. And the first thing they're saying is, I love your podcast. So it's just, I'm just hoping it just gets more and more out there.
Same for me. Cause I was at StarCast and, you know, people know me from doing the Shivani show or from Bruce Pritchard shitting on me all the time. People recognize my voice. They recognize me from Why It Ended. And I hope you guys recognize Why It Ended too. We are at Why It Ended on Twitter. We are, oh, Robbie, real quick. Do you do bookings and conventions? Do you have any contact info you want to pass along?
Yeah. RobbieEbookings@gmail.com and then at Robert Strauss at Twitter and Instagram. Come on. You know this, guys.
And check out our Patreon site. If you're on Patreon, you got this show super early and you got the news first. Patreon.com/Why It Ended. Of course, Where It Ended is our YouTube pro wrestling tees. Pick up a t-shirt and be like Larry. Robbie, great job. I guess nothing else to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is weird. I'm a guest, so I guess I got to let you finish it off today.
So I get to say it by myself finally. So we'll see you next week
on Why It Ended.